Welcome back to Practicing Catholic. You know, even amongst devout Catholics, there's a diversity of opinions on the role of choral music in the Mass and in other parts of our practice of the faith. Well, whatever your opinion, it never hurts to learn a bit more about it. So joining me now is Nick Chalmers. Nick serves as the director of choirs at Chesterton Academy in Hopkins and as director of music at Annunciation Church in Minneapolis. He's also artistic director of the Miranda Ensemble, which we'll be talking about today. Nick, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us yet again. So let's start with this whole Miranda Ensemble thing, Nick. What is the Miranda Ensemble? How did it get going, and what does it do?
So a lot of people asked about the name, first and foremost. So it's named after Pico de Mirandola, who is a Renaissance philosopher and theologian. And sort of based on that name is what you might guess. The music that the group does most often is what we call early music. So music of the Renaissance, music of the Baroque, and music earlier than that. That's probably 80% of what we do. But the group was founded in 2011, and so that was kind of in mind, but we also wanted to do music of contemporary composers and local music. So in the last years especially, we've commissioned local composers. We have an Advent Christmas disc coming out this December, actually, which has a bunch of early music on it, but also features the works of four local contemporary composers, Linda Kochelmeyer, Matt Culleton, Andrew Kane, and Tim Tkach. So for choral music lovers, those might be names you know. And so most of what we do is early, but we've also in recent years had a bit of an emphasis on contemporary music as well.
All right, very good. So who makes up the group? How large is the group?
Yeah, so it's smaller than most sort of traditional choirs. We have anywhere between 6 and 10 vocalists per show, and then we usually have a couple of instrumentalists as well to kind of help us fill out the texture. And the musicians are, generally speaking, from Minnesota. We have a couple of singers that we've used a lot in the last few years that are Madison-based, but it's Midwestern singers, and so we kind of stay local in that way as well.
Nice. Very good. So before we get into the whole role of specifically choral and maybe even early choral music in terms of our faith, I want to make note of you've got an event coming up next weekend on October 23rd, Sacred Works of the Flemish Renaissance. To give us some idea about how that came to be.
So when we say the Flemish Renaissance, we're talking about kind of a large group or kind of a large area, a large group of countries. Generally speaking, France and music of Flanders, but also including the Netherlands and Burgundy. And the sort of the main genesis for this program for me this year was it's the 500th anniversary of the death of Josquin des Prez, who is certainly one of the most prolific composers of the entire Renaissance, and I think one of the most important. And so we're doing a lot of his music and also some of his contemporaries and people that composed around the same time and in the same place. This repertoire it's unbelievably beautiful. I mean, when I think of Flemish choral music, I think of rich, dense textures and low ranges for the voices. It's really music that's easy on the ears. But it's also some of the most complex in terms of the compositions. Peter Phillips, who directs the Tallis Scholars, which is an early music group in England, he was describing Josquin specifically, but also the music of this era, and said that he thinks it really should be equated to the symphonies of Beethoven, just in terms of the sheer invention of the music. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when we think of choral music, we don't think that. We think, you know, symphonies and orchestral music, those are really complicated. And choral music is just sort of for easy listening. And I think this music is easy to listen to. It's among the most fascinating in terms of kind of the compositional complexity as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And I would trust your opinion on that, certainly.
Yeah, do you know I like this music?
Yeah, it sounds like, well, I suppose it's always helpful to sing things that you like, which actually is a great transition point, a great pivot point into another topic of conversation, which is the role of choral music in our lives of faith, perhaps most especially in the liturgy, but outside of the liturgy as well. You know, these days there's such a wide variety of genres of music and ways of including or not including, quite frankly, music in the Mass, and yet you know, there's a diversity of opinions out there about choral music. And what would you recommend? Well, let's start with this. What is the role, in your opinion, what is the role of choral music in our lives of faith?
Yeah, well, I mean, during the Mass, I always think of providing music as a means to help people to pray more deeply or to pray better, to put it very simply. And so music in the liturgy is never strictly in the foreground, but it's also not completely in the background either. I mean, it's sort of adjacent to the prayerfulness of the faithful and uplifting the liturgy. So, you know, in terms of outside of the Mass, I think that, you know, this type of choral music specifically, I think there's just an inherent objective beauty to it. And so I just think that's important to consume in our lives in all forms of art, sort of in general.
Mm. Right. And it's that, I guess it's that objective beauty that I wanted to underscore too, is that there's something about that we need to open ourselves up to, even if we don't necessarily, at least at first impression, find that we are drawn to it or that something that really sparks something within us, it's still worthy of our investigation, is it not?
Yeah, no, it is. I had a student several years ago who was giving a speech at a gala at Chesterton Academy, and she said something that always sort of stuck with me. And I think it pertains to music. She's talking about the faith in general, but if we think about the music of the Catholic faith, what makes it important and what makes it beautiful is not that it's like everything else we consume. It's that it's not like everything else we consume. And so rather than trying to sort of emulate the music or the culture that we get in the outside world, kind of really focusing in on again, what is beautiful and specific to this. And that's what separates it from everything else. And that's why I think it has value.
Well, in helping us all to appreciate choral music a bit more, too, Nick, what makes for, now we're moving into the world of aesthetics here, but what makes a piece of music beautiful?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that a graduate school teacher of mine would talk about the word craft, and he would bring this up over and over and over again. And so I think, you know, you can sort of tell when something has a compositional craft to it. There is art put into its creation. Looking at some of this music we'll be singing in a couple of weeks here, you know, there are pieces that are built around a simple cantus firmus, a simple chant melody, which people might be able to recognize. And there's five or six voices that are woven around this melody contrapuntally that perfectly complement it. There are other examples where there is a sort of a canon or a double canon happening between the voices, where you have a soprano voice directly imitating another soprano voice, and then the tenor voice imitates that, and then a bass voice imitates that, and you have this strict imitation between the voices. So there's clearly like mathematics happening in this composition, clearly painstaking detail, and yet as you close your eyes and listen to it, it just sounds heavenly. So, again, this idea of craft, what went into its creation, the sort of genius behind that, but then is it accessible? You know, can we listen to it in the car? Can we listen to it and sort of appreciate its beauty on a simpler level?
Right, right. And, I mean, you're hitting right where in the spot that I would say really appeals to me about that, is that it's kind of like, okay, forgive the analogy. I know it limps in a lot of areas, but you know, a lot of people have it in for baseball these days. They just think that baseball, it's too slow of a sport. There's not as much happening. You know, you have to sit through a lot of pitches before anything exciting happens. But here's the deal, is that I've found anyway, is that as my familiarity with the sport has grown, then it becomes a more intriguing game to me as I watch the subtleties of what's going on. And what I'm hearing you saying is, at least in some way analogously related to that, is that if you understand, if you can pick out even some of the complexities of the things that are going on within these pieces, it will help to appreciate the overall structure of it, the overall craft, as you said, of it, and help you enter in even to something that may on the surface sound a bit simple. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge sports fan in general and a baseball fan. It was a tough year for the Twins, unfortunately, but yeah, a right, good year to appreciate the subtleties of baseball, I suppose, more than wins and losses.
Right.
No, I think that's right, and I think the more something doesn't have, you know, sort of a hit you over the head overt draw. I mean, you know, the Super Bowl, for example, is an right. example of something that, you know, everybody watches, and there's sort of clear why they watch it. And
yeah.
But yeah, the subtlety and the nuance of watching a baseball game, or yeah, appreciating the small details, and also there's a, you know, not to sort of lean too much into this metaphor, but there's a, you know, this music was written with the acoustics of the church in mind, and I think there's an ambiance element to this as well. You're in a beautiful space like Holy Cross. You can see beauty. You can smell the incense from the mass that just got done with. You can hear beauty. You can hear the voices and the instruments echoing, sort of like being at a baseball game. And you smell the hot dogs, and you hear the anthem, and you know. So it's, again, it's a sort of an all sort of all encompassing experience.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great way of, again, furthering the analogy, I suppose, but also to invite folks in. And I do think. I do think that we need to take or contend with the fact that, well, you know, we talk about the eroding of attention spans, however true that is or not, but there's that, there's this kind of increasing addiction even to entertainment. We have to step out of that, or we're invited to step out of that, I would say, when we come face to face with choral music in the midst of sacred choral music. Because as you've already put it, that this is an invitation to help people pray more deeply. Is that something that you would say the Mirandola Ensemble has really aimed at as part of that? Or is it more just a concert to go and appreciate the music?
No, I think that it has to be kind of an all-encompassing sensory experience. I mean, obviously they're there to hear music, and that's the primary focus. But again, I think that the venue matters a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that the way a concert is lit in terms of the lighting matters a lot. I think the way the ensemble is positioned at the venue, and kind of, you know, and using the acoustics, maybe singing a piece or two from the back of the church and something from the side. And I think that, you know, not because people require this, but because it does add to the sort of the quality and the enjoyment of the performance. I will say, you know, on October 23rd, this is a concert per se.
Yeah.
But the Mirandola Ensemble, increasingly in the last couple of years especially, has been asked more and more to sing for liturgical services, and not just Catholic services, of all denominations. And I think that whether it's clergy or just the faithful in general, I think that when they hear this music, there is something holy about it, they think. Mm-hmm. And of course, the texts are sacred, but there's something more than that. If there's something when they hear the music that they think, yeah, this belongs in this place. And so, yeah, I'm not sure if I answered your question at all.
No, well,
I said some words.
Well, we're using up our time, and actually we are nearing the end of our time, Nick. I could go on talking about this for a long time, but, why don't we hit the specifics again? This is the Mirandola Ensemble performing at Holy Cross Church in North Minneapolis on Saturday, October 23rd at 8 p.m. It's an evening of sacred music from the Flemish Renaissance. Nick, where can people find out more about the concert and even purchase tickets in advance?
So our webpage, themirandolaensemble.org. For ticket information and for any information about the ensemble upcoming performances, we have a really, really exciting year, including being the headlining professional group for the Twin Cities Catholic High School Choral Music Festival. Which is being put on by Dr. Raber from the University of Mary. So there'll actually be some Catholic high school choir singing, and the Mirandola Ensemble will be singing for that. So that's in December. And then, as I said, we have an Advent CD available for purchase in December as well.
That's great. Well, it's themirandolaensemble.org. So with that definite article in there. Nick Chalmers, always a pleasure to speak with you. Hope you're doing well. God bless you in your continued work.
Thanks for having me on. Talk soon.
All right. Take care. Well, yes, themirandolaensemble.org. Now, some of you know that yours truly hit the big 5-0 earlier this year. Well, something else has also recently turned 50. The partnership between Yesu Christo Resucitado and the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Deacon Mickey Friesen will tell us all about it right after this.